Great. Thank you all for coming to my talk. This is a great turnout. It's very exciting. My name is Ray Kelly, and I've been a developer for about 25 years, and 18 years of which have been in the security space. So I got my start with a company called Spy Dynamics here in Atlanta, and we wrote one of the very first web application automated pen testing tools. So basically this app would, you'd put in your URL, your website address, and it would go out and hack your website for you. So companies would buy that software to hack themselves to find out what the vulnerabilities are, you know, before the bad guys do. So I had many roles, many acquisitions later through HP, HP Enterprise, and now a company called Micro Focus. I also led our pen test team for the mobile application. So we test mobile apps for customers, and that's where some of these examples come from. So, and others are ones that are publicly known that have been released in the press, which is really the biggest incentive for any company not to do some of the things that we're going to see here. Oh, I should say too that this is a little bit different. Most of the things you see, most of these panels are panel-esque. This is a little bit different. This will be more of a presentation, and then we'll do Q&A at the end. Just a couple of considerations. Everything that you're going to see here is either publicly disclosed already, or it's been anonymized or scrubbed. So no 0 days for any of you guys or anything like that. The other thing to take away here is these are developer mistakes. So I'm curious, do we have any app developers here of any kind? Okay, don't take this personally, this presentation. How about security folks in general? Oh, wow. Okay, great turnout there. How about people just curious what this is all about? Okay, good. These are about developers making mistakes that make the apps vulnerable. So these aren't nefarious people. These are people, developers, trying to do the right thing. But the mistakes that they make can lead their apps and their data to be compromised. Talking about insecure devices, this really doesn't have anything to do with anything. It's just a great story I love telling. So back during the Cold War era, there was a hotel near Washington, D.C., where all famous dignitaries would stay, like presidents of other countries, kings and what have you would stay there when they're over visiting the president. Well, in this one particular hotel where they stayed, the hotel was kind enough to provide them with a paper shredder because, you know, you have to shred your important documents while you're traveling. The thing about this particular paper shredder in this hotel, though, in all the rooms, it was made by some three-letter acronym of the government, our government. And what they had actually done is in the top, right before the shredder, was a paper scanner. So as they're shredding their documents, it's scanning it and actually sending the data over the electrical line into another room in the hotel where everything was being scanned and read as it was being shredded. I just thought, that is awesome. Exactly. So talking about mobile specifically, why mobile is so, it's more susceptible to problems than other apps is what we're seeing. And there's a few reasons for that. Mobile is hot. What company does not have a mobile app now, right? Who isn't using mobile apps? And unfortunately, if there's a team to put security aside, it's the mobile team. And the reason for that is pressures by companies to get mobile apps out today. Every time you open your app store, how many updates are there for apps, right? It's just constant churn of apps. And that's because companies are pressuring their developers, hey, get this out quicker. No, we don't have time to wait a week for you to scan your website, to do the security testing. We'll get to that later, right? And another drawback is mobile apps are actually relatively easy to make. So the entry, anyone can make a mobile app these days. You know, there's all these cross-platform type development tools like Cordova. It's almost drag and drop application development these days, you know. And who's thinking about security when they're putting that together? So, and companies these days, it's getting better, but company security budgets aren't the greatest, and we see this all the time. Although we are seeing this become better, it's happening slowly, but it is getting better. The number of mobile apps that are out there is just rising. So I know this is really hard to see with the wrinkles. It's like wrinkle encryption. But this chart here starts at 2013. There were 4 billion mobile devices. 2019, we're over 5 billion mobile devices that are out there. So that's how many targets you could almost see that as, right? You know, mobile devices with apps on them. We had done a case study for a major enterprise customer. And this customer had 120 mobile apps. And this is not out of the ordinary. We have customers that have 1,000 mobile apps. You know, if you think about, you know, Acme Corporation, and they're in every line of business, whether it's shampoos or candy bars and what have you. So it's not completely unusual to have a lot of mobile apps. And what we found is 66% of the 120 that we tested had a critical or high vulnerability. And what we mean by that is it either disclosed one or more pieces of personal information, personally identifiable information, or we were able to compromise the back-end system that that app was talking to. So, again, some of those reasons that we just saw in the previous slide attribute to that. And we are going to show examples of that also. So another key difference on the mobile threat surface, there's two key differences. One is magnified network vulnerability. And what I mean by that is think about when you're in a hotel here or in the airport, how many times do you see free Wi-Fi, right, in your list of Wi-Fi connections? Don't connect to those. Just don't, if you can at all costs. If you have to, don't use your banking app. Don't use sensitive apps. You know, maybe Facebook is okay. But it's very possible. And there was a talk I wish I could have seen where they did a War Chewy talk where they had a Chewbacca walking around with a fake a Wi-Fi connection, basically, that was just picking up and mobile devices were automatically connecting to it, right? So at that point, they could be actually intercepting traffic and looking at information. So that's a big difference. You know, desktops don't have that problem, but mobile applications do, or mobile devices. Another one is the physical aspect of it, right? It's easy to lose this, and it can be left anywhere. And it's kind of, it's embarrassing, but I got to tell the story, though. So I was at a conference similar to this, and I was watching a talk before my talk, giving this presentation, and I was sitting in the back of the room, and I get to this part, and see, it's easy to lose your, and I reach in to get my phone, and my phone is not in my pocket. What in the hell did I do with my phone? I'm looking in the back of the room, and it's on a table that I'd left where I was sitting. So I was like, oh, I meant to do that. See, that's, I'm showing you what how that happens. They didn't buy it, so. So, the mobile threat surface, to do a thorough penetration test of a mobile app, and this is the techniques that we use at our company, there's three aspects that we're going to look at, okay? There's the client, and what we mean by that is the device, the app on the device. So what is the application doing? Is it storing data on the device unencrypted, like usernames and passwords, personal information, to ensure that it's encrypted? So that's something that we want to look for. Poor certificate management. Is the app using SSL? If you think of a typical website, right, where you have a little lock in there. So is the mobile app using secure communication between the app and the endpoint? So things like that. Network. What's going over the network? Again, we're looking for things like personal information that's unencrypted that can be sniffed out. We're looking for backdoor data leakage. And an example of that is sometimes third-party software like analytics, right? Somebody can easily pull in an analytics library. What analytics is that grabbing from your user, your customer, and where is it sending it to? And a lot of the time that's unknown. You know, all the developer cares about or the company is, I want the stats. How many people are using my app? What kind of devices are they using? And so they don't really pay attention to what's being actually transmitted or how it's transmitted. And then the last part we're going to look at is the back-end web server. Okay, so here we're going to look at things like injection flaws. Can I steal the database? If you're in the Hacking 101 yesterday, we did an example where we actually stole an entire database from a web application. And also cross-site scripting is another example. And we had an example of that yesterday as well. We might do those again tonight in the 201 if anyone's still hanging around tonight for that. So that's what we're looking for on the server. Okay, so that makes up your mobile application, those three aspects, and what we want to try to look at for vulnerabilities. So now we can get to the good stuff and see examples of each of these. So server side, we're going to start kind of at the back end, okay? Server side vulnerabilities. A lot of the times developers, what we say, they'll assume that it's invisible. And what I mean by that is the endpoint, the server that the mobile app is talking to, there's no website if you think about a traditional web page, right? Like you log into a website. It's usually an API. So it's communicating using, you know, we're just sending data back and forth. And that's typically not going to be indexed by Google or any other search engine, right? Because it's not a website. So developers go, well, no one's ever going to find that, so we don't need to worry about testing the back end because it's just an API, no big deal. Well, that's wrong because the bad guys will find that API and they will exploit it and grab information from it. So that's kind of one of the developer mistakes there. And that even though it's an API, they are vulnerable to all the same typical web application, the webby type things that you are familiar with, to the same types of vulnerabilities. It's no different. And again, developers may say, well, again, it's just an API. It's no big deal. So here's an example here. So this was an API. The only thing that would talk to this endpoint. Oh, my. Sorry. Hello. We're jamming out. Sorry about that. So this particular endpoint that this mobile app was talking to was vulnerable to a vulnerability called WebDAV. And basically what it allowed us to do was put any file we want to on their server, any file. It became like a Dropbox for us. And so what we were able to do was upload a file like you see here, click here to win tickets. Okay, and there's a little link there that was gonna send us to a malicious site. What I would do if I was a bad guy is send this link to every, you know, just spam email to, you know, a million addresses, right? And it's gonna have this actual company's URL in it, so it looks legit, because it is their server. So even if someone's looking at a link, it's gonna say, well, yeah, that says Acme Bank. Of course, that's my bank. But they're gonna see this page here, and they're gonna click on the evil link, and then I'm gonna install software and malware and all sorts of bad things on your laptop at that point. So again, this was made only for a mobile app to talk to, but we were able to utilize it to upload and do our bidding for us.
did you say install it onto a laptop?
Correct, because what I would do, yeah, this wouldn't work for a phone in this sense for malware, but I'm using the mobile end to put my file there, my malicious code, and then I'm gonna spam it to just email where people are gonna open their email and say, oh, look, here's an email from my bank. I'll click it, and they're gonna see this page here that was really meant only for the mobile app, but then that's when we'll infect their laptop with that. Next example, so if anyone remembers, British Airways last year was exploited. And so this was interesting in several aspects. So the general gist of it was there was a 250,000 accounts that were compromised. And this included names, billing addresses, email addresses, credit card numbers, expiration dates, even the CVV, the code on the back of the card was all just given up through this. And so what hackers had done is they were able to get what's called Magecart. It's kind of a script kiddie script that's a credit card skimmer, basically. Okay, so what they did is they embedded this into their payment system on their website. And so what would happen is when you go to the website and buy a ticket from British Airways and you put in your credit card information to say go, this skimmer would take the information and send it to the malicious website while also sending it to British Airways. So the customer got their ticket, but in the meantime, all your data went to this bad guy website. But what made this kind of interesting is, again, this was a cross-platform application. Okay, so kind of drag and drop. And what it did is, I don't even know if the attackers knew the consequences of what they did here, because the mobile app used the exact same script and it pulled it from the website. Okay, so they went from one vulnerable endpoint to hundreds of thousands, because now every single British Airways mobile app became a credit card skimmer. Okay, so when you're buying your ticket on your mobile app, the same script would run and it would steal that information as well. And the last part that was fascinating about this, unfortunately for British Airways, this was within weeks after GDPR was passed in Europe. Weeks. It may not even been more than 2 weeks. It may have been within a week after it went into effect. If no one is familiar with if anyone's not familiar with it, GDPR is the EU's privacy law. So what it basically did was make companies liable. If they give up your private information, you will be fined. And this was within weeks that this had happened. And the fine, actually, you can look it up, just came out a few weeks ago. They finally determined how, because this was so large, how much the fine was going to be. And it was 230 million, I believe it might be euros. 230 million euros was the fine for this breach. And that just came out recently. So out of curiosity, and this is completely not legible, but if you want to look it up, I was curious because like mobile airline apps have a lot of sensitive information, passport numbers, credit card information, you name it. I was curious to look at what I could do legally, right? Because as a pen tester, you can't go poke on backends, but we can do certain things with the mobile device itself and with the binaries. You know, we don't have the source code, obviously, but there's certain things you can detect just looking at binaries. And I found that all of them contain multiple vulnerabilities, okay? I wasn't able to tell necessarily severity, but we had some different classifications that I was able to find. So if you look up mobile airline vulnerabilities, Ray Kelly, it'll probably pop up, and you can see the full research that was done on that. Next example on the server side. So this app was called Bright City. Is anyone familiar with that? Any chance anyone heard that? So what this company did was they had a mobile app for people to basically catalog important things inside of your house in case your house burnt down and you needed it for insurance purposes. And so local governments would promote this to their residents to say, hey, you know, if you have expensive stuff, you know, you can take a picture of it. You can say what the value is. It's basically able to catalog so you can kind of prove to an insurance company, hey, here's all the stuff I had when my house burnt down. So what ended up happening, though, is, again, the backend API, and I'm sure you can't read it, but in the URL, in the link, there was a call that the mobile app would call and say, get user information, basically. And it would have my information. And let's say I'm ID number one. I'm customer number one. And it would return all this information up here. And within that information, you can see it actually returned email address, date of birth. My username and password was returned back, okay? So several things were on there, and we'll come back to it. And but the thing that was bad is when this penetration tester looked at this app, he said, well, what if I put ID number two, what happens? Lo and behold, here comes the next customer's information with the exact data that came back, okay? So, and there you go. You just start iterating through the entire catalog of everything. And I was just thinking, wow, this is kind of crazy. You know, it's kind of like an Amazon for criminals. Hey, I'm looking for a big screen TV. Let me go see who's got one that I like, because I can log into every single person's account now and look at what they have. Problems here, besides obviously username and password being returned. There's something else about username and password also. What's wrong there? Yes, plain text and unencrypted password. Why is this company storing my password not encrypted? The company shouldn't know my password either. This should be gibberish, if at all. But no, it brought back the real password unencrypted. And so that was a problem. So they're storing that data unencrypted on their side. Next problem. So now we're going to look at the network side of things. Okay, so here again, so what we're going to do as testers, we're going to take the mobile app and we're going to proxy the data. What I mean by that is we're going to sniff the traffic and see what is actually being transferred between the mobile app and the backend server. And so this example, most of it's redacted anyways because this was so egregious, it was terrible. So it doesn't matter that you can't see it. But so what our tester did is an app that we had actually gotten to test, and it was from a big time boy band. So think of like New Kids on the Block. Any fans? New Kids? So there you go. Hey. So if you can think about it, their target demographic is probably 12-year-old to 19-year-old girls for this boy band app. And so the tester is testing it, and he was telling me the story about it. He's like, I couldn't believe this. You won't believe this. So he was using the app, filling in his information. Or just, you know, just creating an account and such. And he's watching the traffic. And all of a sudden, out of all the traffic that's going, he sees his home address fly by in the traffic. He never put it in the app. Okay, and it was down to 123 Here Street. It was his street address. And he was saying, how in the world did, you know, so this band, for whatever reason, or developer thought it was a great idea to just start taking that information and start, you know, harvesting that private information. So while that's not necessarily a vulnerability, it's certainly a privacy concern, right? And I hate, because I'm susceptible to it too. Who reads EULAs, right? If you think about, maybe they agreed to it when they opened the app. No one reads it, but the fact that he never actually gave that information, you know, intentionally, made it all the worse, I think. So that was a pretty bad one there. Oops. Along those same lines, I was playing with a new tool to intercept traffic, you know, to make mobile testing easier. And I was using a very popular social networking app, let's say, and just testing it, not looking for anything in particular. And I saw this huge chunk of data. You see that big glob there? Just sort of fly across over the network. It's like, whoa, man, I must have broke some. What did I do in my code? And trying to figure out, and I start looking closer at it, and I'm seeing things in here like home screen mode, screen brightness, the key guard type. What kind of passcode am I using on my device? How much free space is on my SD card that I have installed? And so it was actually harvesting all this information about my mobile device, and they were, you know, harvesting that for, who knows, marketing purposes. You know, maybe in my feed, the next thing I see is, hey, need SD card space? Well, how did they know that? Well, that's how they know, because they're grabbing that information off your device. Bose headphones, they got in big trouble. They were sued for stealing private information, and they clearly did not say what they were taking. So if anyone has the new fancy headphones that are Bluetooth and they have a mobile app with it, right? And you can do your EQ and get everything set right and the volume through your mobile app. Well, they were also taking what music you were listening to, when you were listening to it, and harvesting that information. And, you know, so the lawsuit filed in Chicago saying, hey, that's private information. They shouldn't be doing this because they never informed us they were doing it on top of that. And, you know, and their claim is that this can actually, you know, the type of music I'm listening to and when I'm listening to it gives this company a view into my life, you know, what I'm about, or, you know, so they definitely consider that as private type information. Starbucks, this was several years ago. Does anyone recall when Starbucks got slammed in the press? So they had a problem with their mobile app, and same thing, they were harvesting a third, they were actually, the Starbucks app was sending usernames and passwords to a third-party company called Crashlytics. So this is a third-party application, so mobile developers can include this into their app. It's like drag and drop, and anytime the app crashes, or if you want to log something like user open screens 1, 2, and 3, you can use this app, and it's this library, and it's very easy. So for whatever reason, Starbucks took like the login page, okay? And for some reason, they just took all the HTML, all the code within the mobile app and sent it to Crashlytics. Unfortunately, that included after the user typed in their username and password and hit login, it would then grab the information and send it to Crashlytics. So now Crashlytics has everyone's usernames and passwords unintentionally, okay, because of what the Starbucks developers did. Clear text, right? And it's not Starbucks, right? They're sending this to a completely unrelated company. And I don't know if the developers knew it. I don't think it was intentional. I think they were just, hey, we need to track when someone logs in, so let's just grab whatever's there. Probably was encrypted in transit, because Crashlytics, I think, is. But again, it's the idea that you just leaked that information to another company, you know. And it's funny so this quote came out, and I'll read it here. When reached Wednesday, Crashlytics, a Boston-based firm who specializes in crash reporting solutions, couldn't comment on specific customers, but did reiterate that the firm doesn't recommend developers log sensitive information. So their solution is don't do that, because it wasn't Crashlytics' fault. It was Starbucks and the developers who sent the information over there. So they're just like, hey, that's not our fault that this happened. It's not our data.
Actually, Crashlytics can contact that, just saying if the password comes a clear text, refuse the access of
that. Yeah, again at that point, though, it's not really about the clear text over the network. It's the fact that they got your username and password now. Even if it was encrypted,
yeah,
it still got sent over, and they still have it. So now we're going to look at the client side of things. This kind of things get kind of interesting. So now we're looking on the device itself. And logging is a common one that we'll see. So developers, a lot of times in their code, they'll just say, hey, debug log this out just so I can see what's happening for troubleshooting. And we've seen where usernames and passwords get logged out. So as a pen tester or someone who is nefarious, they're going to plug in their device into their laptop and use Xcode or use Eclipse and look at log output from the device, and they can sometimes see sensitive information being output. And because the developers didn't remove the debug output before they sent it to the App Store. So that's another popular target to look at for testing. So this was kind of interesting too. So we actually tested an app for a rent-a-car company, and they had fingerprint ID. So right, you click your fingerprint, and it lets you into the app. That's pretty common these days. But the developers, for some reason, there's two ways you can do it to do fingerprint authorization. There's one called local auth, which basically just says, yeah, the person who's using the phone, that's the person who's using the app right now. That's it. It's not tied, the app didn't, and the other type is keychain, okay? So that means everything is encrypted to the specific person who's using it. So what would happen is if you gave your phone to somebody else while they have logged in, I say, hey, I'm gonna change the fingerprint to my own fingerprint, and then they could open this rent-a-car app and start using it. So it didn't actually tie it to the specific user. So again, that might be just education on the best way to implement the fingerprint authorizing. So just another example there. This one was always a good one here. So anyone have those banking apps where you can take a picture of a check and send it over? This was several years ago, and this is actually kind of hard to do now. A lot of changes have been made, like especially in iOS since the days with sandboxing and keeping data private within the application. But before that happened, this was pretty rampant where the developers, what they did is when you take a picture of that check, it didn't store it to that app. It stored it in the global camera roll where every app has access to it. Okay, so if you had a malicious app, you go download Angry Birds from some malicious app store, right? They're going to be looking into that folder and grabbing those things. Okay, so we saw that. And this is a good example here where we went back to this particular bank and said, hey, before they gave it, just, hey, we're in a hurry, man. Hurry up with this test. We got to get the app in the App Store, right? We're in a hurry. We got to get this out. And we found this. We told them, hey, this is a vulnerability. They were like, oh, man, that's terrible. Yeah, we'll fix that. Cool. So a day later, they resubmit the app to us, and they say, hey, we fixed the problem. And by the way, we just shoved this into the App Store, you know, for review, you know, to push it out. We're like, okay, if you want us to check it first, but, you know, we want to do that. So we go and check, and they did fix the problem where when you snap the picture, it no longer was stored to that area. But what we found, there was another feature of the app where you can go into everything that's gone through your account and swipe through and look at it. And as you're swiping, it's writing everyone back to the global camera roll, everything that's been through your account. And you're like, whoa, hold up here, guys. And so they had to, again, pull it down. But that's a good example of the pressures, again, that the developers and app teams are under to get their apps out from their management. Debug log screens is another one. So a lot of the times developers will have helpful things for their QA department, let's say, and they'll have some screens in there to turn different options on and off, like turn off SSL and so forth. So, and what they do, they don't remove these before they go to the App Store. And what a nefarious person can do, so it's not in the menu system necessarily of your app where it says, you know, show me my debug screen. It's not there, but a penetration person or malicious person has ways to make that pop up using in-memory, for instance. You know, so you can look at the memory of the app and say, oh, look, there's a flag that says is admin. Well, let me turn that to true and reload the app. And now look, there's a debug screen that I can now open up and look at. And so some examples here, I'll just point out two of them. In the one in the middle, there's a feature, an option there to upload log file. So this app had, you know, so if there's a, I presume a crash or something, you could upload a log file. Well, what we found is the backend didn't validate that it was a log file. It took anything. So we could make that an open, another Dropbox if we wanted, and use that to just start putting our files up on. So another one on the right, it's really hard to see, but there's an option down there. Production, stage, and canary is what it says. So they had the option within the app to change the endpoint, the API that they're talking to, which kind of makes sense. But now as a malicious person, you just tripled my threat surface. I'm going to go look at each one of those servers to find vulnerabilities. Now I have more options to break into your company because I can clearly see there's a staging server and canary server who probably hasn't gone through even as much testing, security testing, as your production environment. And so we were able to find that also. This right here is one of my favorites. So this app was so secure that they used voice recognition to log in. And it was pretty neat. It actually worked. I could open the app and you record anything you wanted. Hi, my name is Ray. And it would validate that and let you into the app. And it actually worked. Like, you could have somebody else say it. You could say something different. It really did do the voice recognition really well. So started digging into it. And again, as a malicious person, if I steal a phone, let's say, if I really want to get somebody, right, and I steal your phone, I'm going to jailbreak it or root it, okay, which means I can get access to the whole file system. And so what we did is when we did this, and one way you test for mobile apps, one thing that we look at is if you look at a directory, just think of a folder on your computer, okay? So here's the directory for this application, and let's say there's 10 files, okay? I record my username and password, and I start using the app, and I go back later after I use the app, and I say, oh, look, there's 11 files. Well, what's that new file that interests me as a tester, as a security tester? So we take it, we open it up and look at it, and it's all garbage. It's just gibberish that's in there, which is great. And we're thinking, okay, that's cool. Maybe this thing's encrypted. Looks all right. But then we start looking more closer to the very top of the file, and we start seeing things like genre, year made, album title. Anyone? What's that? MP3. So what we did is we drug that file off onto a computer. And I should add too, the file made no sense. It was like zebra.xyz. Made no sense what the file was. And so we look at that. So we ended up dragging that off onto a computer, changed it to .mp3, held the phone up, hit play. Hi, my name is Ray, and it let me into the app. So that's an example where the developer thought, you know, security through obfuscation. If I rename it, no one's going to figure it out. If I give it something that doesn't make sense. So that was a terrible idea also on their part. A couple of resources. So that's the end of the examples. OWASP, the Open Web Application Security Project, is a popular website for web application security. Definitely encourage you to check that out. There's a project called Goat Droid. And what that is, it's a purposely vulnerable mobile application. I believe it's only for Android, though. But you can download it, and there's a course that will walk you through how to test that application. And you can see vulnerabilities in it if it's something that interests you and you want to play with it. They also have the, there's something, OWASP was famous for their top 10 list, top 10 web application vulnerabilities. They also have a top 10 mobile application vulnerabilities also. So another one to look at. Okay, so we can open up to questions. I'll do my best to answer it. If I don't know it, I'll just make up an answer. And we'll go from there. Let's see. Oh, we'll get the box coming around.
All right.
Ray can also repeat questions too, so you don't have to walk so much.
Okay. Will this get logged? Because this is probably going to get logged. Like 9 times out of 10, this is all going to get logged.
Well, not on the device. What's happening on the device is not going to get logged. You're right, though, but if we're attacking the server, like we were saying, the account enumeration, that example where it was returning the username and password, where I was going user one, user two, user three, that will get logged. And what the company's going to see is, why in the world were there 100,000 requests within 5 minutes from the same IP address? That seems suspicious. And that's if they bother to go look at the logs. So the back end, you can see some of that stuff, but things are happening on the device, like the fact that I took that MP3 file, the person that made that app is never going to know that, right? They have no way to know that.
Have you found within your testing mobile apps with the back end using a cloud service like AWS, Google Cloud, have those tend to be a little bit more secure?
Absolutely not. And I wouldn't say that they're even worse. They're just, it's just like any other server. Whether it's your own or it's an AWS, you're up to the developer that made that back end to protect it. So again, where it's at kind of doesn't matter in my eyes anyways. If I'm an attacker, I don't care where your server's at or who's hosting it. I'm gonna attack it the same way.
I was just gonna say that you were talking about the debug messages. On Android, there's an app called App Cloner, and it actually lets you change a lot of things, including enabling debug messages on apps that are already compiled and...
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, the debugging lines out, and a lot of people think, well, that will never get into production like that, but it does, and you can find those things.
Netflix logs some pretty bad stuff.
Right. Go ahead, I'll repeat your question.
This may be too elementary, but when you first take an app, I have an Android, it asks you to allow a whole bunch of permissions, and you don't seem to have a choice of allowing particular permissions.
And it looks as though half the time those permissions have nothing to do with that app. Is there anything you can do about that?
Not use the app. Yeah, so the question was about, you know, on Android, it'll ask you, do you want to give this app access to your contacts and so forth? But they don't even do that anymore, do they? They still do that? Okay, I thought they'd kind of done away with that. But yeah, who reads that? And it's like, well, yeah, I want to use my app. And so it doesn't deter, I think, anyone from using those. I mean, your only option is to not use the app. Basically.
That's what it seems like. That's your only option.
Right. Right. Yeah.
So I have a question. Company-owned device, choose your own device, or bring your own device?
Yeah, so that's a little bit different. So you can bring your own device to work. It sort of doesn't matter. If the app is vulnerable, whether the company allowed it on their device even, it's still going to be susceptible to those same vulnerabilities. So I don't know if I have a preference. I hadn't thought about it much about bring your own or not. Everyone brings their own these days, though. So, yeah. Was there something else around that specific question?
If you were an IT security person in the company, what would be your policy?
Yeah, I think it would depend on the business, of course, right, and how sensitive of information you're dealing with. But I've worked at large companies and small, and I haven't had one yet that has made me use their device. And so, but I mean, if you're government, you're probably going to use a government device, right? So.
Trying to get people or else repeat their question.
Gotcha. Yeah, got it.
Hello.
Hi.
I work in quality assurance, and one of my favorite things is asking for more time because things are very off kilter, and as you said, it's always a time crunch. What are some of your favorite fallbacks of talking points for when you need more time and it's pretty important, but the powers that be with all the money don't always want to listen?
That's exactly right. And by the way, thank you for having security in QA. I encourage this all the time. If you're a QA person and you get security under your belt, you're invaluable. That is a tool, and that's QA's job. It's a bug. Security is a bug if there's a vulnerability. So the fact that you're doing that is great. Now, fighting that battle to say, hey, I need more time, it's hard to do it until you kind of prove your point or show, hey, it may take a few times. Hey, look, I found this vulnerability. Had you given me a few more days before you put it in the App Store, I could have told you about it. And maybe have a concise plan to say, hey, if you give me 3 days, I'm going to do this. I'm going to look for, you know, unencrypted data. I'm going to poke on the back end a little bit because I know I'm not going to get 2 weeks to do a full pen test. You know, maybe come up with a plan to say, give me 3 days. Yeah, exactly. So, but yeah, please, if you guys are in QA and you're not doing security yet, just do it on your own. All the stuff I've shown you is researchable. It's out there. Learn SQL injection, learn cross-site scripting on your own, and then just bring it into work one day and just say, look, I can do this, and you'll be the hero for it.
You'll get the one way to kick it out. You're poking where it's not supposed to be poked.
So my question is, what is Android and Apple stores doing from a security perspective to prevent stuff like password downloads and stuff like that? Like, why is the responsibility on a company to hire you to prevent them from sending data across?
Correct. So for the most part, and that's a great question, these Android and iOS and Apple are looking for things like malware embedded, you know, malicious applications purposely that have that. And they do that. I don't know who's better or worse necessarily. I think Android usually gets a worse rap, maybe for good reason. But I would say in this these examples I show, so this is how I can avoid that question, is that these mistakes are things that they will never know. The fact that the banking apps decided to store a picture in the global camera roll, that's not on Apple to decide is that what they should be doing, right? They're certainly not going to go and run every app and determine is that the right thing to do or not, right? So they're kind of limited onto what they can find, okay, if that makes sense. So again, these mistakes, you know, and they're certainly not looking at the back-end servers, all those back-end vulnerabilities, like open file shares, basically. You know, they're not looking at that either. So they're sort of washing their hands of it, that's not them. But they do look for things, again, like known malicious applications, you know, Angry Birds that has malware installed on it, or, you know, not from the right, you know. So with Android, I think it's a lot easier to hook up to a shady Google Play Store, right, and start downloading free apps. Whenever you see those free APK things, those things, do not install those. They are stealing things from you.
Yes.
You can hold it.
Okay. I actually do have a question for someone who's trying to actually get into the field. What would be a good source of information as well as a good platform to start yourself on and more learning directly towards applications like this? Like back in the day, Backtrack was a very big one out there that everyone could utilize and sort of practice on and learn and sort of get like a start point. Is there anything that would be more directly towards this in regards to the apps? Like, because everything's going digital these days for handheld devices. 90% of the world has got their face in their hand half the time on the screen now.
Right.
And now it's getting to the point where at some point one of these will do the exact same thing as an iPhone. What would be a good starting point to get there?
Right. Yeah, just doing that research. Again, that OWASP website is a good start. They also have, the Goat Droid, which is a vulnerable mobile app. They also have WebGoat, which is a famous vulnerable web application, so it's a website. And I can't remember, the Juice Store, I think, is another one too, that we used in our demo yesterday, which is a good way to learn. And really, I don't want to simplify, but this isn't hard, really. You're just breaking things. You're using apps the way they're not meant to be used. You know, the fact that I incremented a number by one, it got somebody else's data. A lot of this stuff isn't very difficult. You just have to kind of a good mindset, a little bit of a developer background certainly helps to have that development background, and then just start reading and doing. I'm a big fan of doing. I'm not great at reading a bunch of stuff. I like getting my hands on it. Exactly. And that really helps make it clear, wow, I just learned a technique to steal a database. Cool, I got that one under. Oh, now I just learned this technique to use cross-site scripting and do spear phishing campaigns to steal people's username and passwords through email. Learn that one and just keep moving on. And there's so many resources on the internet for that. This isn't secretive stuff. You know, I'm not showing you black magic and all that. This is very well documented, researched, and out there for public consumption.
Are any of the professional organizations attempting to address this issue, i.e. IEEE or ACM? No. Are they? Are they doing anything towards promulgating new standards or anything of the kind?
Not so much standards. Every company is going to have their own standards. And, you know, it's kind of unfortunate, but that's just the way it is. If one company wants to spend a week testing, then they're going to do that. We work with companies, some large enterprises, which are very good. You know, they have no ship policies. Hey, if we find any critical vulnerabilities, is a no ship. That app, whether it's mobile or a website, does not get pushed out. That's it, flat. You know, if it's a medium or high, maybe it's a 30-day fix policy, you know, and they're very strict. And then there's other companies that say, man, we're just starting. You know, they call us and say, come in, help us build this program so we can put policies in place and build out our AppSec department. So everybody's at different levels. And those, some of those are large companies. You'd be kind of surprised that are just starting. It is not an unusual story, just starting with security and taking it a little more seriously.
Where do you see this problem heading?
It's getting harder because of DevOps. And so if any of you are familiar with that now, people are shipping applications much more quickly. We have companies that are doing like 100 builds a day with across all of their applications. How do you security test all that? You know, it has to be automated for them. So automation is becoming a big piece of it, so that when they're using their Jenkins pipeline or whatever DevOps process they're using, they hit build, it automatically kicks over to like our software, does the scan as part of the build process before it gets shipped out. And so, but unfortunately that takes time, right? Even if ours takes 6 hours, they're upset about that. 6 hours to do a security scan, we don't got time for that. You know, so it sounds crazy, but that's just the way things are moving that quickly with DevOps.
I may have misheard you, but I thought you said earlier something about a fake Google Play Store and also not downloading APKs. Could you expound on that?
Sure. So there's all kinds of shady Play Stores out there that you can connect to. I see stuff like sometimes if you search for a game on the web, you'll see free APK download for Angry Birds or whatever. And you can actually install those outside of the Play Store on your device. And again, those are going to be malicious apps. You know, you certainly don't want to install those.
Does that sort of mean you should only install from Google Play Store?
I would highly recommend that. Only install from either the Play Store or the App Store. I mean, I never go anywhere outside of that because you don't, I mean, there is no guarantee of what you're going to get at that point.
You said fake Play Store. Is that something that looks like the real Play Store?
No, it doesn't. They're just. Hey, we have way more games than the Play Store. So when I say fake, they're not impersonating a Play Store. They're just saying, hey, we got more stuff and more free stuff. Of course it's free because they're trying to get your information.
Yeah. Earlier you mentioned that several of these issues were systemic to native app development. In your experience, do you find that PWAs are less vulnerable or are PWAs just as bad as native apps?
PWA?
Progressive web apps.
As far as, are you talking about like the cross-platform type?
A thing that looks like a mobile app, but is actually just the same website.
Yeah. I don't think one's worse than the other. Again, it's all about how the developer did it. Now, that Starbucks example was exactly that, where it was a web app to make it look like a mobile app, right? So, but it basically was just all HTML, and that's what they ended up scraping and sending over to the Crashlytics. But that's just an example. But a lot of those other ones were native apps. So I don't know if one's worse than the other. You know, same testing should be applied to both. Yeah.
Yeah. There's reports going around actually this weekend that look fairly credible, but I have yet to read a detailed technical write-up, that the Facebook Android app apparently gathers and uploads hashes of all the libraries on the OS to Facebook, possibly in clear text. Do you know anything about that, or is that, like, true?
I don't know. That would be really hard, especially on iOS, because the Facebook app on iOS, I mean, typically any app cannot reach outside of its sandbox, is what it's called.
Right.
So I'm not sure how that would be, unless you're using another vulnerability to do that. And I think there was one, the master key vulnerability, if anyone's familiar with that, that came out a while back, they used, like, an Adobe key that was public to be able to reach outside of the app and get access to other apps. But so I don't know about that one. I did not see that, but maybe it's possible. But it'd be pretty pretty bad if that was the case.
All right, I had somebody over in this area, and I can't remember who it was. Who was it? Speak now or forever hold your peace. Ah, thank you.
Hi, so other than the Angry Birds APK, are there any APIs or libraries that the developers should avoid because it's being too helpful and sending out too much information?
No, not necessarily. And Angry Birds is an example of a game, but if you think of like open source these days, that's another challenge, open source software. The Struts vulnerability that destroyed Equifax last year, you know, that was an open source framework that people just include into their app, and when that open source is vulnerable to something, well, now every app that consumed that is vulnerable. So open source is a problem, and there are several vendors out there that are specifically scanning open source software. Black Duck is one, Sonatype is another one, that focuses solely on security testing open source software. So the industry is catching up to that, doing testing on open source. But again, that's just one that another challenge that does exist.
Hi. In terms of mobile security, what are some common, tools you use on a daily basis, and what is your preferred operating system for testing?
There's different tools, and I don't want to. I'm kind of avoiding pitching products. But there's plenty of open source out there. Like if you want to, hit a backend server and test it for SQL injection, there's open source tools out there to do that. Doing the stuff on the device itself, that's actually really hard because a lot of it's manual, because you don't know what's vulnerable till you use the app, right? So you actually have to make an account, log in to see what's happening on the device. And unfortunately, that's just manual work to do that. You know, being able to automate that's difficult. There's companies out there, and we have a library as well, stuff that we wrote in-house that can take a binary and look through it and kind of automate pulling some things out. We had a great example here, another one. I probably should have put that in there. So we were looking at Apple apps. What happens when you compile the binary is it'll actually include the path on your Mac, right, in Xcode, the path of where it's being compiled. And a lot of the time that's in the user directory. And we found an example where it had the username, the person who was logged in at the time that did the scan, okay? So let's say it's, let's just say it's Ray. but it was a very unique name, okay? Something that, okay, well, that's weird. No big deal, right? But what we did is we went out and Googled that name, and we found a GitHub account. And what we found on the GitHub account was all of the source code to this company's application, including their SSL private certificates on public GitHub, okay? Because we found that compiled in the app through the binary. And so we called the company because they're a customer. I was, hey, what's going on here, man? We just found this. He goes, that guy hasn't worked here in 6 months. He was a contractor that wrote the app. And for whatever reason, he posted all of the source code, all of the certificates on GitHub out there, and they had no idea. So it had been out there for 6 months, and they ended up having to kill all of their SSL certificates, reissue them, which was a lot of money to do that. So it was a pretty big deal. But that's kind of an example where you can make tools to automate some of that. But again, on the device, it's kind of hard. It's a lot of manual, again, like comparing what's new, what's old, what changed when I used the app. So
I was kind of thinking to address his question earlier with PWAs. With the Starbucks example, that sounded like it was a web view. And In that case, it would probably be better to go with native development. It's much easier to inject JavaScript than it is to insert malicious code into an APK.
Yeah, I don't think I blame anyone for using PWA, but ultimately it was the developer's decision to take that page and send it to Crashlytics.
Right.
You know, whether it was, I mean, they could have done that in native in a different way to say, hey, gather some information, and what they're deciding to gather and sending that to another third party.
But
so it's kind of hit or miss.
Work.
I'd hate to bash it too much, PWAs, but yeah.
Okay, I'm going to preface this by saying that I'm a complete novice at this, so just bear that in mind. As an avid mobile gamer, as a consumer of mobile games, what do I need to be paranoid of for what kind of information is being collected by the developers of those games, especially you know now that it's much more popular to pay to win pay to play and you know actually get additional
credit card numbers to pay for your coins
exactly,
or what have you
exactly.
right yeah again you're sort of at the whim of the developer you know I hate to be like a Debbie Downer here right because it sounds like this is all bad news right I mean most apps are in pretty good shape probably for the most part so and again this was the fault of the developers which is sort of out of your hands right what are you going to do you don't know what's happening on the device so there's nothing really you can do other than not use an app if you suspect it's bad and the only time these guys usually get caught is when it's in the press when somebody finds the vulnerability they go public with it and then all of a sudden now it's a big deal. So, unfortunately, that's the only recourse, really, to find these types of vulnerabilities.
Hi. Some applications, for example, a Netflix application has both an online and an offline mode. Do you have any experience for application developers for sort of patterns for that fall back to offline mode that there are sort of unique security considerations?
I do not. Sorry. Can't think of that one.
All right. Hello. You alluded to a couple times in your presentation that the reason these types of vulnerabilities are so widespread is because there's so much more emphasis put on delivering product and delivering mm-hmm. features. And, you know, that's prioritized over security. And I was wondering sort of what your opinion was on how do we change that as a society or as, you know, IT people. Is it punitive measures like GDPR fining companies for being irresponsible? Is it requiring certification? Is it educating consumers so that they can hold companies accountable?
Sure.
Like, how do we change that culture?
Yeah, it's tough, right? Because you have to have a management, you know, management or a CISO that's on board with the testing, right, to do security testing and prioritize it. GDPR is going to be helpful when companies start getting fined for these things. It's unfortunate it has to come to that, but it really does because I'm more interested as a company in getting my product out and making money, right? Don't slow me down. So having that battle and being able to show that is hard to do. And I don't know if I have any recommendations other than presenting a plan. Hey, here's what we can do. Here's some examples of what's happened to other companies. Boss, if you don't want this to happen to us, I recommend we do this, this, and this. Yeah.
Okay, we are at time, but we do have about three more questions. Is that okay, or we
get? I'll give quick answers.
Okay.
Yes, no questions only.
Really?
No.
It's real easy. Mine was about GDPR, too, and did you think it went too far or not far enough? And I think I know how you stand on that by your last answer.
And actually, I don't know if I have an opinion on that, and I would probably leave that to these other Electronic Frontier Foundation guys, you know, the law people probably. And how far that goes, you know. To me, as a pen tester, any vulnerability is bad. I don't care if there's a law in place or not. I'm looking for anything bad I can find. But there's definitely a lot of other smart guys on these panels that would certainly have more input on if is it enough, right?
All right.
So this isn't a question, but it's a response to this concern that people have been raising about sharing information with apps that you're maybe not sure if you should trust. On Android, I wanted to highlight there's an app called Shelter that allows you to partition the user space of your device. So when you install an app and it asks you, do you want to share access to your contacts and your photo roll or whatever? If you give it a separate shelter space, you're basically sharing an empty photo roll and an empty contacts list. And so you're allowed to still install the app. You can click accept.
Interesting. Yeah, I have not heard of that. Yeah. Okay.
Wait, does Shelter have adware?
Right. Okay, last question, right?
He decided not to ask.
Anybody oh,
else?
Okay.
Going once? Going.
Right here. Woohoo!
I just wanted to go. I know.
we got to get out of here, but the people who are concerned about having their credit card payments and everything like that in a mobile application, the companies that are building these are, have to be able to, in order to use Visa merchant accounts, they have to be PCI and PADSS compliant. There are versions of that that actually do involve them in making sure that that credit card can't be, it has to make sure that it's maintained in a non-volatile memory space, and it has to be encrypted. There's just a lot moving right now with the expanse of mobile applications in general, so that it's their versions come out every so often. I don't know. Do you have experience in doing PADSS?
Yeah. So with PCI compliance, for example, we find that that really has no bearing on what we're finding in vulnerabilities. Yeah, they have to have it, and they get the stamp on their website or what have you. But we're still finding the vulnerabilities, whether we work with companies with or without, that have to abide by that compliance, or Sarbanes-Oxley, or who know, or HIPAA. It's just a policy, right? And whether the developers know about how to handle and code to that policy, it's just sort of a crapshoot, I think. It's a good thing. I don't want to diss it by any means.
I mean, we had to do a major undertaking to make sure that we could pass the version that we were mandated.
Yeah, and if you ask some people, others...
We didn't have a website, so we weren't needing to do PCI. We had to do PADSS because we took credit cards as the payment method. But that was a lot of work.
Sure.
That stuff. Yeah. They're very good at what they do, but they travel a lot.
Gotcha.
The PADSS guys.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, guys.